I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Wednesday night edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast, which is temporarily the San Diego Calling podcast. I guess we're going to have to start calling it.
We're the Anaheim Calling AC pod of San Diego, covering the San Diego goals in their quest for the Calder Cup playoffs. Let's go with that. It rolls right off the tongue.
We'd fit right in with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Hey. It's not really, it's not that anymore, and you know that.
So we're here to break down what was a pretty exciting game tonight in San Diego, game three of the conference final between the Chicago Wolves and the Gulls. The Gulls winning this one 3-1 in a game that had a little bit of everything, Jake. Had some controversial hits, had some good goals, some kind of scrambly plays that were pretty exciting, probably really exciting if you were actually at the game.
Yeah.
So before we kind of jump in here, I guess I should point out that the series was tied going into tonight's game, and now the Gulls have an opportunity to really make a mark at home with the next stretch of play here.
Yeah, I mean, so for those of you that don't know that are just tuning into this, having possibly watched the game or not have watched the game, but the way that this round of the Calder Cup playoffs will go for the goals, because it is dependent on what the teams kind of want to do. It's not a preset schedule. So the goals and Chicago Wolves decided to do a 2-3-2 format for the playoffs. So basically two games will be played in Chicago, then three games in San Diego, then two more games if necessary back in Chicago. I think a big part of that has to do with the fact of travel budgets aren't as big, and that eliminates some unnecessary travel. But the benefit of that type of format is if you can get a win on the road in those first two games, you're set up to not have to leave your home again. And so the Gulls have a chance. If they win the next two games, they don't have to leave San Diego before the Calder Cup final.
Yeah. So, they, like I mentioned, they really have a huge opportunity here to kind of put this thing away. But that's getting out ahead maybe a little bit. But that's the way these things shake out. That's why the regular season ought to matter. Let's get into the action, though, right away here. I don't really have any pregame notes. You know, as far as Ducks related news, I guess that's usually where we start the show. Not really a whole lot coming out. I mean, the coaching search is still ongoing, no real roster movement. So we're pretty much for the rest of the show here going to focus almost exclusively on the goals, some prospect talk. And then, of course, we'll get into your questions at the end for those of you who are in the Twitch chat. So I'm going to jump into the recap here. First period, got off to a interesting start for the goals, I guess you could say. Kevin Boyle, I thought you saw the best and worst of Kevin Boyle.
Yeah.
Almost shot by shot, not even period by period in this game. Left out a pair of really ugly rebounds in front. No one there to clear out for San Diego, which to me has been kind of a theme for me watching this team. I don't know if it's just the games that I've watched, but they do tend to struggle with covering the front of their own net. I don't know if that's just the way that they choose to play, if they're more
confirmation bias a bit with the fact that's now in your head.
I don't know what it is, but I tend to notice that on the goals that do go in. And so anyway, he would leave a rebound out front. It was kind of a rough shift for Benoit and Walensky, who would end up factoring pretty heavily into this game. After that, Ben Street gets the goals on the board, makes it 1-1, just kind of a innocuous. Oh, sorry. It's Corey Tropp who ends up getting the goal, but Ben Street was the one who shot it on net from the point. Kind of just an innocuous play. I mean, not a whole lot going on there. And sometimes, again, it's the playoffs. You're not really concerned with what the goal looks like as long as it goes in.
Yeah.
And so from there, I thought that Kiefer Sherwood did a really good job all throughout this game, but especially on this particular play, just coming down the wing. He's become really good at changing the angle of his shot. I think that's something he does really well, just being able to create openings for himself. What'd you see out of him tonight?
Sorry, I tuned you out for a quick second looking at our Twitch chat. We're talking about Kiefer Sherwood, right?
That's new. That's never happened
that
before.
That never happens ever on this show.
Yes, well, I was just saying Kiefer Sherwood, I thought. Yes. I mean, I have so many notes about him in my just game notes, but I thought that he did a really good job tonight of not only, if you look at his motor, I thought that he's just so good at winning battles when you don't expect him to, but also creating shots for himself that I really think that the parallel between him and Andre Kasha, that's the first thing I thought when I first watched him play, and now I feel like I just can't get it out of my head, but that is, in a way, how he plays.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much on par. I mean, what is it? I forgot who gave Andre Kasha the nickname, but he's been called the Energizer Bunny. I think Kiefer Sherwood fits that same description. He's the guy that's going to get on the forecheck, do kind of the dirty work for a line, but also be able to pitch in by it. The dirty work in a way of not exactly throwing his body, but getting in and kind of disrupting guys and throwing some defensemen off their game in the corners and really being able to pitch in and get that puck back and allow for the team to set up and get some chances. And the thing that he also does well is he has a lot of speed, and it's very noticeable with him coming down that wing. He's able to kind of find some space for himself and, like you said, be able to kind of create his own shot. And that's something I've noticed in the games that I've watched so far in this playoff run for the goals, is that Kiefer Sherwood is having an impact. And the interesting thing, kind of not transitioning, but kind of turning this into a little bit of a focus from the Ducks side of things, is where does he fit? Our own CJ Woodling was at the game tonight, and he made the comment on Twitter basically saying, with Kiefer Sherwood playing how he is, I don't know how he is not on the Ducks roster next season. And while that is true, there's not a whole lot of space for a guy like that in terms of with openings right now. So the fact that he's playing this well forces management and forces the Ducks to ask some questions about their rosters. And having a guy force you to do that is always a good thing, though.
Right. I think that with Sherwood, he is going to have to play his way onto the roster, even though there are times where he looks like maybe not the best player on the ice, but just the most physically dominant. I think he must have some exceptional cardio, because when he's out there, he has phases. There was one shift in particular, which I believe was in the second period, where he won like three puck battles in a row down low in the Wolves zone. And then you would think after that most players would come off, and he actually came all the way back and I believe broke up a play. And that's not easy to do for a lot of guys. And so, you know, I don't know how, you know, if he's going to end up being exactly that player in the NHL, but it's impressive to watch right now.
Yeah, it's definitely impressive. And I think that if he does become an impact player at all at the NHL level, then that's a big win for this Ducks team. I mean, this guy was an undrafted college free agent. So he was a guy that they didn't have to waste any picks on, waste any trade on him. It was basically he ended up choosing the Ducks for whatever reason, whether it was playing time, whether it was feeling comfortable with kind of the people he talked to with the organization. But a really good find by the Ducks amateur scouting.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I do believe that Sherwood, Kevin Waugh, and maybe not Kevin Waugh, but I believe also Max Contois, I believe they all share agents. So I don't know if there's any connection there.
Potentially.
Yeah, but another thing I did want to point out here, that's kind of it for the first period that I have. I didn't think that the goals were very good in their own zone in the first period. I thought that especially in the latter stages of that first, they let up a lot of chances. And outside of that, not a whole lot to report. I thought that Kevin Waugh is a guy who I've kind of been looking for in these games. And tonight in particular, he had one really bad turnover coming down the rush in the first period, where just kind of goes behind his back, no look to absolutely no one. Well, actually not no one, to a Chicago Wolves player, which on one hand, you want to praise the creativity, but that was just bad execution. Did you see anything out of Waugh tonight, good or
no.
bad?
No. I was about to make the comment. I really think I only noticed him once, and it was at one point on a power play, and I don't even remember what it was, but I think for the most part, he kind of had kind of a very, very quiet, very, just really kind of didn't do a whole lot throughout the entire game. And for a guy that's going to be a UFA, that's not what you want to see. I mean, I'm trying to look right now at his point totals in the playoffs, but I don't believe he's really had that big of an impact in the playoffs so far. Let me double check, but I believe as it is loading, Kevin Waugh, he only has 3 points in the 7 games that he's played. So not exactly a huge impact while on the ice for a guy that is supposedly supposed to be one of the leading scorers of this team. So
and an infamous Group 6 UFA this summer.
Yes.
Kevin Waugh.
The Kevin Waugh fan club might have to get ready to be disbanded.
We're the Group 6 fan club. We're the Group 6 groupies.
Yes. Yes.
Speaking of another Group 6 UFA, I thought that Kalle Koskela had a pretty good game tonight for the goals.
I would agree with that.
In the second period, I'll get to him a little bit later, but I thought just overall he contributed to a couple goals for the goals. But before I get to that one, I do have to mention maybe one of the best plays I've just seen, period, from any player at any level.
Yeah.
Beginning of the second period, the goals on the penalty kill, and Sam Steel just coming in, doing his job, forechecking, knocks down a clearing attempt, and doesn't just knock it down. First off, knocks it down at a legal height. I believe, was it with his glove or his stick? I think it was with the stick.
No, it was stick, and it was with the blade of his stick also.
It was with the blade of his stick at a legal height, and he gets it down into his feet, so into a position where he can control it, and then stick handles all the way into the slot and is able to slip it 5-hole on Oscar Dansk. I thought that play, it summed up a lot of the things that, and sorry, that would put the goals up 2-1.
Yeah.
It summed up a lot of the things that I think Sam Steel can become, because nothing about that play was necessarily overwhelming skill or overwhelming physical attributes. It was just really smart, really well executed. Yeah. Obviously, there's a skill component, but what a goal by Sam Steel.
Well, yeah. I mean, you look at it, it's not as if he had to dangle anything. It's not as if he showed some flashy speed. It was flashy, but it was flashy after kind of having to backtrack through the entire play. The goal was very nice. It was a great move to score 5-hole on him to open up Dansk from Chicago and put it through him. But it's really kind of looking at the play as a whole that is what you need to do to really get an appreciation for what Sam Steel did on this play. Being able to knock it out of the air like that into some space and being able to corral it and then drive the front of the net, to be able to do that so seamlessly, so flawlessly, and so smoothly is really impressive. And like you said, it's something that's not exactly flashy, not going to jump off the page in terms of something that will end up on NHL highlight reels, but it just kind of shows the smart play that he can do. I mean, knocking the puck out of the air does take a high skill level, but like I said, it's not that flashy skill level that's going to end up on NHL highlight reels.
Absolutely. And we're getting asked in the chat, and I actually don't have an answer to this, and I feel guilty. What is going on with Isaac Lindstrom? I don't believe he was part of the lineup tonight.
I believe he's been getting healthy scratched of late.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I've been seeing. I don't believe he's injured, but give me one second. I'll try to get an answer.
Yeah, well, because if you recall, he was centering a line. I believe he was centering the fourth line for the goals, and tonight they did feature a bit of a different look for their center depth, and so I think that may have been a part of it.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily sure, but I know I'm pretty confident it's not injury related.
Yeah, it's simply he's 19 now. He's a young kid.
He's
19. Is a playoff run.
Yeah.
They're trying to let him sit out and not get basically run over, get some
probably doesn't have the total trust of the coaching staff, which is not really even anything against him. It's just like you said, he's 19 and these things are going to happen.
Yeah, and he's also a guy that hasn't been with the team all season, so that probably plays a factor into it somewhat.
Right, I mean, there is a bit of that hierarchy, as bizarre as it can sound. And gotta love the AHL website. Just no score sheet, no list of healthy scratches. That's what you want. That's what you want. It makes their job a lot easier. Sorry, I'm complaining here. But yeah, I mean, no Isaac Lindstrom tonight for the goals, we should mention.
Yeah.
But all right, let's move along here a little bit with this second period recap. So, depending on who you cheer for, this may or may not have been the highlight of the night. Not necessarily for positive reasons, but Andy Walensky just absolutely levels Cody Glass, who, by the way, this is a totally random note, but Cody Glass had 69 points in 38 games in the WHL this season. That's a lot of points.
That is a lot of points. That's not that many games, though.
And well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. That's a lot of points. He had 54 assists in 38 games. Also 20 years old, which I think, I mean, at this point, it's his fourth season in the WHL. So it's probably time for him to start showing something. He who has been consistently dangled as a trade item for the Vegas Golden Knights. But anyway, let's get back to the hit here. So Walensky makes contact with the head, receives a match penalty. And at first, you know, obviously the replay angles are not NBCSN level when it comes to the Calder Cup playoffs. That's fine. At first, I thought it looked like a clean hit, but when you kind of squinted hard enough on the replay, it was pretty obvious that Walensky made contact with the head, and indeed the official call, match penalty, check to the head. And it was a five-minute power play for the Chicago Wolves, who ended up not capitalizing in what probably was the turning point of this game, the fact that they couldn't capitalize there. What did you think of the hit on Cody Glass?
I think so. It was a weird play. I think on first watch, for whatever reason, the angle that they had or that they were using at that point in time on the broadcast was from the corner as compared to just using the main camera.
Well, it's because they don't have a camera on the other side of the rink, because the play was on the near boards closest to the broadcast camera. Okay. And so I don't think they have cameras on both sides like they do in the NHL.
Okay. So when I first saw it, what I thought happened was basically Walensky comes in and kind of basically almost tries to cronwall him, coming in kind of backwards a little bit and catch him with the shoulder. And it seemed like Glass kind of bent over and kind of lowered his head at the last second. And I was really kind of confused as to why there was a penalty on this play. But as I started going through Twitter, I ended up seeing, and I ended up quote tweeting, so if you want to go through my timeline, you'll be able to find it. A good angle from it that's from behind the net, where you can clearly see Walensky's elbow come out, and he's leading with his elbow and catches Glass straight in the head. And so it's one of those where, yes, Glass kind of changed where his head was at the last second. Maybe that definitely plays a part in it. But the bigger thing is you can't lead with your elbow on a hit, and the elbow makes contact right with the head of Glass. It has to be a five-minute major if the ref saw it from the right angle. So I really don't have a problem with that play, or not with the play. I don't really have a problem with that call.
Right.
It's one of those where I think that it depends on the angle you saw it. And if you saw it from the only angle they showed on the broadcast, then you probably are wondering why that's even a penalty. But once you kind of back out and see it from a different angle, it looks like the refs got it right on the ice. The only thing that the goals had going for them after that were all of Chicago ended up jumping Walensky and ended up getting a 2-minute penalty. So the goals were actually only on really a 3-minute kill at that point, because one of the Chicago players got 2 minutes. So that wiped out the first 2 minutes of the 5-minute major. The other big downside was the goals were without Walensky then for the rest of the game, which Walensky is one of the bigger defensemen on the team. He eats up a lot of minutes, provides the top power, or is on the top power play unit. He's kind of a big presence on that team. And the fact that they were then without him for half the game is not exactly great for that team, but they were able to kill off that penalty and were able to really push on forward without him.
Yeah. And to clarify the Lundestrom question, our John Broadbent of Anaheim Calling, also of Defending the Nest SD, is mentioning that Lundestrom potentially still feeling the effects of a hit that he sustained in the Condor series and may have re-aggravated a strain he got during his Swedish club playoffs. So make of that what you will. I think that this time of year, everyone's playing through something, but that's definitely just some more context there on that overall situation. But the goals do manage to survive that kind of turning point moment, as we called it. Trevor Murphy would make it 3-1 goals. Trevor Murphy, who was brought in the Giovanni Fiore trade, if you will recall, a trade that I bemoaned just because I enjoy saying Giovanni Fiore's name and because I thought he had some potential, maybe, kind of, we'll see. But Murphy would make it 3-1 for the goals. A scramble in front, kind of led by that line of Street, Trop, and Kosola, would pop the puck back out to the point, and he would just slam it home with the slap shot from the point, and that would make it 3-1 for the goals. And at that point, both Street and Trop would finish with 2 points apiece on the night for San Diego. So I thought that those two guys in particular, that line, again, with Kosola, he of Group 6 fame, I thought that they were very good
yeah.
you know, throughout the entire game.
Yep. Agreed completely with you.
Yeah, and so moving on here, towards the end of the second period, Max Contois almost buried a chance off a really nice feed from Sam Carrick. This would be off of a power play chance. The goals did get that late opportunity, and this is just something that, I don't know, again, maybe one of those things that I just can't get out of my head, but I did think that Contois just has this ability to get open. It's almost like a receiver in football who just always yeah. seems to be open. I mean, it's kind of like that in this context where
yeah.
he kind of finds those areas, he slips in and out, and he didn't score tonight, but he yeah. had at least three or four opportunities to do so.
Yeah, and going forward a little bit into the third period, there was another type of play exactly like that where Cracknell ends up throwing it across the front of the net and ends up finding Comtois on the back to the net, and he's just not able to bury it. I think he gets his stick checked a little bit. But the ability of him to kind of put himself into a position to receive passes has been impressive so far, and that is a skill. I mean, part of it is obviously going to be on the person delivering the pass, but another part of it is finding that soft space on the ice and getting yourself open to receiving the pass, and that is also a skill. And it seems like Comtois, from what we've seen, has been very, very good at that.
Absolutely. So before we get into the third period here, a quick ad for the recorded version of this podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, back on the other side here, let's get into the third period of this game. And the third period was probably again, depends who you're cheering for, but probably the less exciting of the three, just because yeah. really it was the Wolves pushing and pushing and pushing to get a tying, or even just to get closer, and they really weren't able to do that until the very end. I thought that the goals, not necessarily defending at a very high level, but they just kind of made it difficult for the Wolves to really get yeah. into those dangerous areas. And, I mean, it paid off for them.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. I think the goals did a really good job in this game of not exactly playing a trap style of game, but I think they did a good job of limiting Chicago space, especially come that third period, and their ability to kind of enter the zone with speed and be able to get shots off. I think the other thing they did is, on top of that, they weren't just sitting back. They mm-hmm. weren't just chipping the puck out of the zone and allowing Chicago to attack them. They would try to stifle Chicago when they got into the zone, but they were also trying to turn the puck the other way. And granted, we don't have things like Corsi 4 percentage or things like that. but we can just look at pure shots on goal. And in that third period, Chicago's outshot actually in that third period 8-9 by the goal. So the goals actually had more shots on goal in a period where you would expect, based upon score effects, that Chicago would actually have more shots on goal, and by a pretty significant margin, also being up 3-1 and being down 3-1 actually for Chicago in that game. So I think there's a lot of good takeaways that you can have from the goals in that third period with how they were able to defend that lead. And yes, granted, as we'll get to eventually, they did allow one goal in that third period. But I think for the most part, the way they defend that lead is how you want to do it. You're making it tough for people to find space in the middle of the ice, but you're also not just chipping the puck out and letting them come at you in waves, because that is when you get in trouble. Even if you're allowing a team to stay to the outside, not giving them the middle of the ice, if you're just chipping it out of your zone and basically giving the puck back to continually come back in the zone and come back in the zone and come back in the zone, eventually something's going to find a way in. They're going to just get so many shots on goal that even if they're from a not as dangerous area as the middle of the ice, some sort of bounce is going to happen. And so I think the Goals did a good job of keeping that from happening in this period.
Right. No, I thought that they did a pretty good job overall. Some notes from throughout the third period, Sam Steele had, again, a couple of moments in that third where the hands were just on display. There was one shift down low where he just kind of comes out of the corner, realizes he has more space, and just works his way into a really good scoring position. I thought that that was really good to see. Max Contois actually had a really nice stretch pass to Adam Cracknell at one point. He wasn't able to finish it off. Corey Tropp had a really nice scoring opportunity on Oscar Dansk on a wraparound attempt, and Dansk was able to just get that right pad out and make the save. Again, I think you mentioned it earlier, but Contois jumping up into the play almost buries it home on a rush. So he was everywhere tonight, I thought, even though I don't think he actually picked up any points. But really, the probably, again, just more from a prospect evaluation perspective, Steele had another play where he entered the zone with control of the puck, but only after, you know, just casually stick handling through three different Wolves players, just kind of curled it into the middle of the ice and then worked his way through almost as if he had set up one move for the next. I thought that that was really impressive to see. And then, like you had mentioned earlier, towards the end of that third period, Goals just kind of struggling to get it out of their zone, ends up costing them, and the Wolves would bring it within one. That was pretty much all that they could muster, though. Goals can't find a way to pick up an empty netter, but they do take it 3-2. I think I said 3-1 earlier. Don't know why I said that. I guess that second Wolves goal was a little forgettable. Too late. But yeah, just overall a really solid performance, I thought, from different pockets of the Goals lineup tonight. And now we await the next game on Friday in San Diego.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting with Sam Steele, and I think we've talked about this before in the past, but if you look at his point production over the years, and specifically, I actually want to pull this up so I have the exact number, so bear with me one second, but if you look at his numbers when he first started in junior hockey, they weren't that great, and that's kind of the reason why he went 30th overall, because if you look at the numbers he put up after he was drafted, those aren't the numbers of someone that goes 30th overall. Those are the numbers of someone that goes a fair amount higher. So in his draft eligible year, I believe it was, let me see, because he was drafted in 2016. So he put up 70 points in 72 games. The following season, he put up 131 points in 66 games. The season after that, 83 points in 54 games. So I feel like this is going to be a guy that he kind of needs time to adjust to various spots and adjust to basically what they can do or kind of how people are going to offend him. And then once he's able to make that adjustment to the skill level of that league, to make an adjustment to the speed, that different type of stuff, he's really able to thrive. And I think we're starting to see that with the Goals right now, because if you look at his point totals, he put up 41 points in 53 games, which is pretty good for first year or rookie in the AHL. But it's not exactly kind of what you expected from a guy with his pedigree. Whereas now in the playoffs, he is just absolutely lighting it up. And if I can find the numbers really quickly, he has 13 points in 13 games. So more along the lines of kind of what you expected in the regular season from him. And this is in the playoff when scoring gets harder.
Absolutely. I really do think that he has, as his first pro season has gone along, he has gotten better. I mean, it's interesting to think that, you know, this we have stopped watching, you know, the Ducks stopped playing a while ago now, but his season has continued. And from where I compare where he was at training camp of this season, of this 2018-19 year, to where he is now, I'm not going to say night and day. I feel like that's a little too strong, but he has made a pretty significant improvement in his overall game.
Yeah, and 100% agreed.
And I guess the last thing I'll say, just to kind of wrap up this game, I thought that he was clearly the best player on the ice for either team. Just from a you and I did our Patreon pod the other day, which I recommend everyone go check out, patreon.com/acpod.
You we get did to a hear full... Felix. I was going to say, you get to hear Felix try to struggle with some NHL trivia, which is very entertaining.
Well, pertinently here, we also did a Vegas Golden Knights offseason preview, We basically did an off-season preview for every Pacific Division team. We're actually going to go through all the divisions. And we had talked about how kind of weirdly constructed the Golden Knights are. And watching their game tonight, I don't want to say made me worried about that team, because I don't really worry for anyone except the Canadiens of Montreal. But I have to say, Cody Glass, maybe it's a little unfair because he has been pretty good this year. I wasn't really blown away by him, and I wasn't really blown away by the rest of their team. They don't really have a ton in the way of guys who seem ready to make that next step, which I feel like they're going to need guys like that with the way that they've built their team so top heavy. Obviously they made a big move to acquire Mark Stone, and I think that's the move you're going to make if you want to compete now, but they're in an interesting spot. I don't know. Just watching that Wolves team did not give me a ton of confidence in what's to come in the next 5 years, obviously outside of the NHL level for the Golden Knights. And that may be a little too maybe short sample, confirmation bias, whatever. But I feel like there is something to it.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, they have a lot of issues. We talked about it on that podcast, but
and Jake is even more pessimistic on them than I am, which is the funny thing. That you're almost underselling how on the pod you were way more down on the Golden Knights prospects than I am.
They're in
cap hell.
We didn't talk about their prospects.
Well, we didn't really talk about their prospects, but I guess we should mention that they have made a lot of moves to bring in guys, both in terms of cap space, sacrificing prospects like Erik Brännström, and a lot of it has been done in order to make their present team better. Even look at how great Nick Suzuki has been playing in the playoffs in the OHL. They traded him to obtain Max Pacioretty, which, you know, I think is a defensible move, but the point being that they have taken a significant bite out of their prospect pool, and they're going to be a good team for the next couple of years. But they have a lot of cap junk to work through, I would say.
Yeah, they.
So we'll see.
Yeah, they have a lot to go through. But getting back to the goals, overall, really good win. You'd like to see them not allow that goal in the final four or five minutes of the game and have to.
It was
kind of
bound to happen, I would say.
Yeah, but we saw this happen again in the Bakersfield. I believe it was even the game that we talked about where they allowed the late goal and then allowed the winner. In overtime after that. And so I wouldn't say it's a trend, but it's something that has happened a few times in the playoffs where they've allowed a late goal. And so it's one of those things that, yes, it didn't end up coming back to haunt them tonight because they were up two goals, but you'd like to see them do a better job. How much of it is just goaltending at the AHL level is not as good as you're going to get at the NHL level?
It's not. I'll just put it that way. It's not. I thought that Kevin Boyle, again, he obviously played great playing up with the Ducks this season. He's been very good in his last three postseason starts. The San Diego Gold's tweeting out here. He stopped 69 of the last 72 shots he's faced for a .958 save percentage. He could potentially be a goalie in the NHL in some capacity, but I just watching him play, I've just never come away thinking this guy is just very sound technically. And maybe it's just me. Maybe I just have some weird vendetta against Kevin Boyle, but I don't think that's what it is. But I have never come away thinking this is a guy who has a lot of tools to become a, you know, a surefire NHL goalie. But clearly at the AHL level, he's getting it done, and that's what matters for the Anaheim organization right now. Okay, so anything else you want to bring up or wrap up or break down about tonight's game?
Want
to talk about the blue line a little bit? We've gone forward heavy. I did think that Simon Benoit had some pretty good moments.
Yeah,
breaking up some plays. Andy Wilinski had some good moments as well. His night ended pretty early, but in the time that he did play, I thought that he looked good. I thought Jacob Megna didn't look particularly good tonight. I don't know if
he had a couple bad turnovers.
Yeah, he had a couple turnovers. Obviously, Trevor Murphy, how can you question the night he had? One goal, one assist.
Yeah.
And then
tonight.
Josh Mahura is a guy who was interesting to me because he had a couple plays where it's like, oh, man, that is ambitious. I mean, a couple of stretch passes through the middle that probably stressed out the coaching staff a little bit. But he's a guy who I think is going to need another year in the AHL. I don't think just watching him play tonight. Unless he really makes a huge leap over the summer, and comes in to training camp, just absolutely kills it. I kind of see him as needing maybe one more year because he has a lot of talent. He has a lot of good instincts, but I think he needs to refine that a little bit. And then lastly, Jacob Larson. I mean, I
was about to bring up Jacob Larson.
What do you have to say about Jacob Larson?
I think he had a very solid game.
Oh, well, tell me why. Tell me how.
I just think in a good way, he wasn't very noticeable.
Yes. I mean, I feel like that is a... That is pretty much the most you can say about him tonight is that yes. He was largely invisible, which I guess is what he will be at this point, is a guy that if you don't notice him, he's playing well.
I was about to say that. We say invisible, but if you
No, it's not invisible.
Things,
right.
It's the fact that what he did is not directly noticeable to the eye and plays a very quiet game, and that's kind of what you're going to end up seeing out of him. He doesn't seem like he's going to be a guy that's going to be able to put up the points necessarily in the NHL. He's probably going to be a bottom-pairing guy to maybe second-pairing guy, and I think we saw that a bit from him tonight. And so I think if he's able to translate the way he's played in the playoffs, I think he's going to have a pretty decent year next year for the Ducks.
Yeah, and I mean, that's who he's always kind of been. I mean, at every level, he's never really produced, offensively. I mean, he's a guy who is probably going to – I mean, every time I watch him, I just get more and more confident that he will be a just kind of solid stay-at-home, maybe third-pairing guy in the NHL.
Yeah,
which
he'll probably
I guess for a 27th overall pick is probably – you could probably do worse. You could probably have a guy who could never play in the NHL. So,
yep, pretty proper value.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to get into some questions here, or did you have something else you want to add?
I wanted to bring something else up really quickly, kind of on the note of prospects, and I think that this is an interesting conversation to have. The Memorial Cup is currently going on. The Halifax Mooseheads have qualified for the semifinals of the Memorial Cup. I believe that happens this weekend, and the final also happens on the weekend. I believe maybe it's on Monday, but the Ducks have two prospects on the Halifax Mooseheads in Benoit Olivier Grue and Antoine Morand. And I'm trying to pull up the stats right now. If you can give me 1 second while I'm doing this, but I believe both of them, especially Grue, have had a pretty good playoffs. But so I'm wondering what your opinion is on them potentially joining the goals. Do you think they will get into a lineup? Do you think that, I mean, we saw Isaac Lindstrom was actually hurt, so we can back that out a little bit, but
he has played in these playoffs.
Yes. Do you think that they end up getting a shot? Because the difference is, though, Lindstrom did end up playing some games for the goals this year. So there is some familiarity there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, basically all of these guys will not have any familiarity with the goals because they will not play at all.
I highly doubt it. I think that if they do join the team, it will be as healthy scratches who are gaining some experience being around the club. But I think that at this point, this stage in the game, the value add isn't quite there. I also think that, you know, for them to not only just join the goals, but also to play pro hockey for the first time in this situation, it's a great experience. Don't get me wrong, but it's also a bit of a stretch here, and I would say that I would not expect that under any circumstance.
So just kind of for everyone out there, Antoine Morand has 15 points in 23 OHL playoff or QMJHL playoff games. So that's including the Memorial Cup. And then Benoit Olivier Grue has 12 points in 10 playoff games.
Yeah, but I mean, both guys, you know, Antoine Morand and Benoit Olivier Grue, I think they're both guys who could definitely, I mean, they're probably going to be in pro hockey next year. They're both working their way down their eligibility here. And so it's going to be interesting because Max Comtois is obviously very close to Antoine Morand, and then they do have a history. So I don't know if they're going to get to be line mates at any point in time in the AHL, but it is something to monitor for sure.
I believe that actually Benoit Olivier Grue is not eligible to be in the AHL next season.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
I'm checking right now.
I was going to go back and correct what I just said. So Grue drafted last entry draft, so last summer's draft. And he's actually pretty young. I mean, he's 19 years old. And I believe that he was only in his third. So this season would have been his third full season of major junior hockey. So I think he might actually qualify. I think for him, it's just a matter of it's got to be one or the other. It's basically the Max Contois situation, wouldn't it be?
No. So he's not eligible to be in the AHL at all because he doesn't turn 20 before January 1st. That's how the cutoff is for AHL. So he can be with the Ducks, but he's not going to be able to be in the AHL next year. His birthday is February 6th, so that means he will turn 20 after the new year, which makes him ineligible to play in the AHL. Also, February 6th, great birthday.
Is that your birthday?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Also, Adam Henrique's birthday.
Oh, well, there you go. All right. Do you want to get into some questions here? I think we may have a couple.
Yes, but before that, we are going to need to take a short little break and we'll be right back. And we're back. For those of you listening to the recorded version of this or watching the recorded version of this, even on YouTube, we do a live stream of the show each and every time at twitch.tv/acpod. It's twitch.tv/acpod now. If you want to help us out, you can do that there by subscribing to the channel with Twitch Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, you have Twitch Prime. And it is completely free and a way for you to help us out and really help us keep this show going, especially over summer when it's going to be a bit slower. Those subscriptions help even more to keep this channel where it's at, keep us at our Twitch status that we have. So every time you can sub every 30 days, it's very, very helpful. So let's get into some questions. So here we go. Kempafu said, question for later. If Dallas Eakins ends up being the coach for the Ducks, do you think the turtle ahead method is going to work in the NHL? I know you said they had more shots on goal, but I assume it won't be as easy in the NHL also, or NHL level. Also, if he sends up one attacker, my money is on his boy Silverberg.
Right. So the question here with Dallas Eakins about what kind of tactics that he employs and if those are going to translate to the NHL. I don't know. I mean, it's such an unknown with Dallas Eakins right now and what he will really bring. I feel like he is the kind of coach who has a philosophy, has an overarching philosophy, but I think that he also seems to adjust that to the group that he has. And so I don't think he will necessarily force one set strategy onto this team. Granted, the team that the Ducks will be icing to start next season will it won't be a perfect resemblance of this current goals team, but it will feature a lot of guys that are on the goals right now. And I'm not saying Dallas Eakins is going to be the coach because we still don't know that. But I do think that the way that I've seen these goals play is a lot. It reminds me a little bit of the way that the Ducks were playing at the end of this year, where there was a bit more up and down. There was a bit more, you could call it controlled chaos, whereas the chaos in the beginning of the season under Carlisle, where they were pretending to change their style, that didn't really pan out because they weren't able to hone in on those areas of the ice and keep those under control. It was too much just up and down, and it would leave them exposed in those dangerous areas. And that's the thing with playing a high-risk style, or at least a higher-paced style, is that you have to be able to come back, right? You're asking your guys to skate a lot more. And, you know, with an older roster, or at least older parts of a roster that the Ducks have, that might not even work line by line. Some lines are probably going to play a lot different than others. But I do think that if Dallas Eakins is to be the next coach of the Ducks, whatever he does, I think will be more based on the personnel that he has than really one set strategy.
Yep. And if I'm understanding Tony's question correctly, he's kind of wondering if this almost this anti-tank, or I don't know if tank is the right word, but anti-turtle, sorry, there's the word I was looking for. Anti-turtle is going to work in the NHL, and I think the answer to that is yes, because we've seen it work for many different levels. And the thing is, a lot of teams, part of it is natural tendency. When a team is down, they're going to end up pushing harder, pushing faster. They're going to end up getting more shots on goal, more shot attempts, everything like that. But just because that's happening does not mean you should adjust your system to allow them to do that. You should not be receiving pressure and receiving pressure and receiving pressure. So I think that it does work in the NHL level. I think the only thing you have to be wary of is there's guys with higher skill level that can expose you a bit at times. with, like Felix said, on an odd man rush or things like that. So you really have to have your guys skating and really get them moving. But I think it can work at the NHL level. You just have to make sure you have buy-in. At the end of the day, that's the key thing with some a system like that is kind of like what you said. You have to have guys that are willing to buy in, really to come back on the back check, really to put in the effort and really skate, because that requires skating.
Right. Yeah. Skating does indeed require skating. Good. I had to. No. But really, I mean, it is one of those styles that can wear on a team as the season goes along, where you're playing that back and forth style where, you know, every opportunity you get kind of costs you on the other end, so to speak. And that's why I'm curious to see how the Ducks maybe restructure their lineup this offseason. It really does make me wonder, a guy like Daniel Sprong, for example, who we seem to constantly speculate about his future more than maybe anyone else. I don't know where he necessarily fits in all of that, because he is not the kind of up and down skater that I think we see some of these other prospects as. But
yeah,
again, that's all speculation at this point.
All right. So Christian J brought to my attention that Corsica.hockey, we've kind of dabbled in this a little bit here and there as the season went on. They have a prospect and draft ranking. So if you look at that prospect draft ranking, and there's a value all the way on the far right-hand side. The issue is I don't exactly know what it stands for, but its value?
Well, what else could that stand for?
Fair. No, but I'm not sure what the number goes for. But the interesting thing of note, and I think there is something to it, because all the names part of this are all kind of good players, whereas if you look at something like projected war per 82 games, the list is a little bit weird by looking at that. So when you look at this, it kind of makes sense. But Isaac Lundestrom ranked 10th on there, 10th. Behind Jack Hughes, Jake Bean, Kaapo Kakko, Eric Brännström, Juuso Välimäki, Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, Evan Bouchard, and Henry Jokiharju.
Yeah, I'm gonna take that, and I'm gonna take my grain of salt, and I'm gonna put them together. And
I think I'm gonna make of it what I will. It's interesting. I think the takeaway is kind of, you look at games played, and the fact that Lundestrom only played 27 games in the Swedish Hockey League, that probably plays a factor into it, because there's not as big of a sample size with him as other guys that are on that list that have a bit more of a sample size. You have a guy like Jack Hughes who has 50 games as compared to just 27. And the other kind of confusing thing is Maxime Comtois is below Lundestrom at 18. Troy Terry's at 27.
Well, because the younger the player, you know, they're more of a prospect, and so there's more projection. Whereas I feel like if you're older, you get hurt a little bit more if you haven't been as dominant, because now at that point the value add isn't quite as there as it is for Lundestrom. Yeah. So I don't know.
I should make mention that is based off his time in the Swedish Hockey League this year. So there's that 27 game. So sample size may play a part in it, but
yeah,
worth bringing up. It's interesting though.
Yeah, it's definitely something I'll be looking into once we have some time here.
Yep. GoDucks10 asks, with limited spots available on the Ducks roster without major moves being made, which young prospects would you expect to see on opening night?
Oh, well, I definitely think Sam Steele will be on the team next year. I don't think there's much of a doubt about that at this point, especially with the Ryan Kesler news being what they are. I would also expect Jacob Larson to be on the team, although I don't know how much of a shocker that would be. Kiefer Sherwood, I think, will crack the lineup. I just think he's going to play his way into it. It's more of a prediction, more of a speculative guess than me actually looking at it just big picture wise. I just think he's going to outplay some of those guys and towards the bottom of the lineup. And then in addition to that, I also think that Max Comtois will make the team. Jake, I'm sure you have a name you want to add here.
Yeah, I think the only locks to make the team as of right now are Troy Terry, Sam Steele, Max Jones.
Max Jones? You're not putting Comtois in there?
I don't think he's a lock. I think you look at the roster.
Probably not. No, you're probably not.
I think you look at the roster and it's way too tight.
But why would Max Jones be a lock? Because he got time at the end of the season? Is that the rationale?
I think that's the rationale I'm taking a bit. But
I would say Terry and Steele, and if you want to lump in Larson, are the only true set in stone, zero doubt locks. I would put Max Jones. If we're tiering I would put Jones at a tier below Locke.
A lot of people were hyping up Max Jones by the end of the season, including Bob Murray.
Yes.
It wasn't. And so
yes,
I
but
can,
he will. But he will. But the thing is that I can't believe this is what we're going to debate on in this podcast. But
I mean,
here we are.
Yeah.
It's the off season, baby. Gotta drum up the.
Gotta do something.
Gotta drum up the controversy. I do think that with Jones, even though he had a good end to last season, he's going to have more competition than he did during that time. Max Contois, they play the same position. He's going to come in, and they're going to be competing almost directly for the same spot, if you think about it.
Oh, they 100% are.
And so that's why if you have multiple guys vying for the same spot, I don't know if I can confidently say that he's a lock. Whereas I think Terry is locked in to a top nine role.
Right wing. Yeah.
And then I think Sam Steele is locked in as a third line center, or I guess second 2A, 2B, whatever you want to call it. With Adam Henrique. And then I think Jacob Larson is, I mean, he's a lock. He's going to be on the team. You know, he's proven to at least be a reliable third pairing option. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I can't quite put Max Jones in that category just because I think he's going to have to fight for his spot.
Yeah, I could see it. So just for those of you out there that want to know, the Ducks essentially have once Patrick Eves and once Ryan Kesler go on LTIR to go into the season, the Ducks will have essentially 11 forwards on the roster per cap friendly right now, but mm-hmm. that only has Troy Terry as a prospect on the team. It does not have Sam Steele. It does not have Max Jones on there. So essentially they have essentially 2 to 3 forward spots to fill with the kids. So that's probably going to be Troy Terry, Sam Steele, and then probably it's going to be Max Jones or Max Comtois, like you said, and potentially Kiefer Sherwood being a healthy scratch and coming in when needed.
I think Sherwood will be like a 13th forward next season. That would be my guess.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's getting to that.
They're gonna have so many forwards.
I mean, Kiefer Sherwood is, let me see, 24. So I mean, he's at that age where he needs to be in the NHL next year, even if it is as a healthy scratch. There's not exactly a whole lot more development.
But I don't think that's a bad spot for him.
No,
I think if you get 40 Kiefer Sherwood games. Or 50, that's still a good, I think that's a good amount. That I mean, I don't know if he's a guy who's going to play every night. It depends who the coach will be. I think if Dallas Aikens is coaching, there's a real possibility he plays every night. But if it's not Dallas Aikens, I think he may be a guy who kind of has to work his way back into favor
a little bit. That's a good point. If Aikens really loved what Sherwood does that give him an inside edge to get a roster spot next year?
Oh, absolutely.
Just a thought.
I mean, 100%.
I want to make mention our good buddy Tony Kempafu in our Twitch chat was asking, basically, doesn't the fact that Comtois played 10 games this year force him or make him a lock on the NHL roster next year? No, it doesn't. He's AHL eligible next year. The only thing that those 10 games did was basically make this year count on his contract. So this is year one of his 3-year entry level deal. Next year will be year two. The year after that, year three. So essentially, Comtois can be sent down.
Those 10 games that needed to happen.
Yeah. So the thing to think about is waiver eligibility. And I believe that Max Comtois, let me do a quick check on waiver eligibility, but I think he has a fair amount to go in terms of waiver eligibility in order to need to go on them. I think he still has a fair amount of exemptions.
Yeah, he's waiver exempt.
Yeah. How long does he have on it, though?
I think it's the remainder of his contract. So
no, it's not. Remainder.
Well, then it's at least next season. So
give me one sec. I've got it open. So if you look here, so he has to play in... Oh, yeah. He's got a while. It's whichever one of these two comes first. It's either four seasons or 150 games.
Yeah. 160, I think, is the number.
Anyway. He has to play in 150 more.
150. Yeah. So, yeah. It's the duration of his current contract. Basically, he would have to play the next two full seasons. So, I don't know. It's going to be – this is something we're probably going to end up talking a lot about for the next 4 months, that the Ducks forward competition is going to be pretty cutthroat. I mean, I think that's the only way you can put it. There's a lot of guys who kind of all bring a relatively similar set of skills. You know, they all are pretty mobile, pretty offensively inclined, but none of them – outside of some of the guys we've, you know, that we said are locks, are really head and shoulders just locks to make the team. So it's definitely going to be one thing to monitor come training camp, unless, of course, the Ducks make some trades during this offseason, which could be a total possibility. I mean, between Max Jones, Max Contois, and Nick Ritchie, there's some redundancy there. And so I'm wondering what they end up doing. Because to me, out of those three, you know, and there's still a little bit of that maybe maybe a bit of an irrational prospect shine on Jones and Contois, but I think Ritchie is probably the least in favor within the organization of those three.
I'd agree with that. Agree with that completely. I think you and I might be two of the only people that are completely good with Nick Ritchie.
I mean, it's funny what being a top pick, or I guess a 10th overall pick will do, because if you judge Nick Ritchie, if you judge his play on its face, he's fine. But if you judge him from the lens of a 10th overall pick, then that's when the disappointment, that's when some of the frustration sets in.
Yep, and I think that disappointment has led him to be underrated.
Do we talk about Nick Ritchie literally every podcast?
I mean, think it's possible. I don't think so. We talk about Troy Terry every podcast. I make sure of that happening.
That's true. I'm well aware of that. Yes. Although you've been a little more sheepish lately. I'm a little disappointed.
There hasn't been anything for me to get excited about.
He's still out. We're probably not going to see him in these playoffs unless they go deep into the final.
I was going to say, I thought you were about to say deep in the playoffs. I'm like,
Deep into the final. Deep into the next round. Yes.
Deep. That next round. Just the final round of the playoffs.
Yeah. All right. Anything else we can jump into here?
No. I think Troy Terry he'll probably get into a game or two. I'm curious to see. Well, I mean, here's an interesting question. If you're the Ducks, do you want Troy Terry playing?
Oh, well, I think we talked about this last podcast, but
I may have forgotten.
You probably did, but I think unless he's absolutely ready to play, there's no reason for him to play and rush back, basically. There's just the upside for that is very minimal compared to the potential downside of re-injury or whatever the case may be. So unless we get any other questions here within the next couple of minutes, I think we can pretty much start wrapping up. Actually, this reminds me. I just found us a new topic before we wrap up. Stanley Cup final is set. Boston Bruins.
Oh, it is.
And St. Louis Blues. It's happening, folks. The St. Louis Blues kind of mercifully finishing off the San Jose Sharks playoff run in Game 6. The Sharks missing Erik Karlsson, Jonas Donskoy, Hurdle, Joe Pavelski, and Thomas. I mean, they had nothing left by the end of it.
They were just so
they had used up all of their cards basically to get to this point. I mean, all of their abilities they used, all their special powers, and here they, and so basically it's over for them. And now, as you should definitely check out in our off-season preview, they have a lot. The Sharks have a lot of questions to answer this summer.
Yes,
and
completely.
And it starts with the money man, Erik Karlsson, and what he ends up doing. I'll just spoil that my prediction is he goes to Vancouver from the Patreon pod. And if you listen to it, you'll find out why I think that. But yeah, so we're set to have a really good Stanley Cup final. I at first wasn't really that thrilled about the idea of this matchup. It's not really two franchises that particularly excite me. But that being said, both, you know, after kind of all of the craziness, all of the wackiness of the first round of the NHL playoffs, these are actually probably two of the best teams in the league to make the final. Yeah. I mean, two very good 5-on-5 teams, two teams with a ton of star talent. So this could be actually a pretty memorable final.
I think it's going to be a really good one. Ken Pafu chiming in saying it's the worst cup since Nashville-Pittsburgh. I think this is going to be a fun final. I'm actually really excited because you get two teams that kind of play a similar type of style that are built in somewhat similar ways. It's going to be really fun and interesting to see what can happen. And I think you also have, I brought this up on that Patreon pod, the fact that the last time the Blues made the Stanley Cup final, it was against the Boston Bruins.
Yeah.
Against the Boston Bruins. And that was when Bobby Orr had that infamous flying goal.
Yeah. Yeah, and we just got a question in the Twitch chat, which I want to answer for pretty much only one reason. So any predictions on who will be the third pairing RHD for the Ducks next season? Let me introduce you to Yanni Hakanpaa, who the Ducks signed as a free agent. He's the Bob Murray. He's the Bob Murray special right off of the secret menu, or I should
still
say
hasn't
the not
technically been announced.
The not so secret menu. 6 foot
still
five,
hasn't
right-handed.
Been announced.
Still hasn't been announced, but it's been reported by reputable sources.
I still don't know how to pronounce his name.
Yanni Hakanpaa. I'm sticking to it. Unless our Finnish listeners want to throw me a lifeline here, I'm sticking to it. Yanni Hakanpaa, he right now is the heir apparent to the Ducks, to the Ducks' third line or third pairing right-handed D spot. So there it is, Hakanpaa. I think I probably said his last name like 10 times in the last 30 seconds.
I mean, it's probably going to be him. I think there's actually going to be trades on the horizon though with the D. I really think that there's going to be some movement there.
Believe in Papa.
Andrew Zuni asked us, "Who's the better hockey player?" And NHL watcher. NHL watcher, it's whatever, because there's no right or wrong way to watch the NHL. But between us, who's the better hockey player?
Oh, wow. This is roller hockey, I'll give myself the edge.
Yeah, you have the edge in roller. Would you say that I'm better than you on ice?
And then I would say Jake has the edge on me on ice for now.
Ooh. Ooh.
Well, you're a better skater on ice. I think that's like not even a question.
Oh, okay, I'll take it then.
Yeah, I think I would give myself the edge in hands and like puck handling skills, that type of thing. But Jake is a little speedier. He's got a little more Energizer Bunny to his game.
I can also pick top shelf when I need to.
Yeah, when he needs to. I mean, you could argue that's every time you shoot the puck. You always need to snipe top shelf. But yeah, once my ice skills catch up to my roller, I see this equation maybe changing a little bit.
Speaking of which, stay tuned. I believe we'll have an announcement in the upcoming days about a potential Anaheim calling game. So stay tuned. Official information. Just stay tuned. This is probably going to be the first you're hearing of it. Keep your eye on Twitter for that.
Yeah, Andrew Zuni asking, who has the best IQ? So are we taking an IQ test right now? Is that what's happening?
I've never actually taken an IQ test.
I don't really care to know my IQ. I just kind of want to assume it. I just want to assume it's a good one. That's basically all
hockey
I hope
IQ.
For.
He's saying hockey IQ.
Hockey IQ, I mean, I feel pretty good about mine.
I'm pretty good with mine.
Yeah, I'm pretty good with mine. So I don't know. I think that's a tough one to answer there. Ken Pafu's saying in the chat. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think what needs to happen is people just need to come watch us play.
Yeah, come watch us play. Be the judge. Because for us, you know, as humble hockey players, you know, we're not going to brag about ourselves. We're going to leave it to you, the viewer. And so you may have an opportunity to do that in the near future once we announce that. Ken Pafu's saying we need a sub on our Thursday night league in Irvine. I can potentially do that. DM me. All right, so I don't know how we got so far away from the Stanley Cup final, but what's your prediction?
Who's your pick? Blues in... Oh, I so want to say four to keep that whole trend going, but Blues in six.
I'm going Bruins in seven.
Blues in six, they win at home, and they skate around the ice with Gloria playing.
I don't even understand that reference. Like, I know what you're talking about, but I don't understand any of it, and I'm not going to try to.
Fun story on that. For some reason, I had assumed that had been like their win song for like years, like similar to like how Sweet Caroline is just a Boston Bruins thing.
Sweet
and it's just something I
Caroline.
Never knew. Bum, bum, bum. Sorry, had to. And I just never knew because it's the St. Louis Blues. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mean, why is everyone going to pay attention to them?
Wow. Hurtful.
What?
Hurtful.
But so getting back to it, turns out that is something that started this year.
Okay. Anyway, this is the end of
you
me caring
really don't
about want to
talk about it.
This is the end of me caring about that. I'm going to go Bruins in seven. I don't feel great about it cause I hate the Bruins, but I'm going to say it. So I was reading a really good article from Dom Luschichin at The Athletic today that the Bruins have one of the highest goal differentials of any playoff team through three rounds since they started doing best of seven in every series. And that actually hasn't been a great predictor of who wins the final in recent years, but they've been
small
really good
sample sizes.
They've been winning big in these playoffs, while the Blues have basically scraped their way to the final. So I'm going Bruins
grinding
in seven.
It out.
What?
Grinding it out.
I don't feel good about it, but I think I'm rooting for the Blues, but I think the Bruins will win.
All right. I was going to say, how are you rooting for the Bruins as a Montreal fan?
Well, I wouldn't even root for them if I wasn't a Montreal fan. They're unrootable for. I don't think that's proper English, but that's fine.
That's fine.
All right. We should wrap this thing up. We're well past the hour mark here.
Yep.
All right. Do you want to plug? We've already announced a bunch of stuff, but what's the new things? What are the new things to look for here at the
ACPod? The newest thing, you can find us officially. We are on Spotify. You can find us, search Anaheim Calling on there. You can find us on the the Apple Podcast app in the same place you can. Like we announced, you sadly will not be able to find us on SoundCloud anymore. That's just part of the transition for the show to the Vox Media Podcast Network. If you can leave it and you have not done it already, leave us a rating and review at Apple Podcasts. It really helps the show. It gets us a little bit more visibility. Just check out the show on there. YouTube also, we do it there, twitch.tv/ACPod. Check out the Patreon, patreon.com/ACPod, where we put out some really good content. We'll have a second episode coming out in the next week or two also to get all of the May episodes out there. The last one we did was a good one. It was probably the longest one we've ever done in an hour and a half. So you get that along with any of the other previous bonus podcasts we've done. So you get a pretty good back catalog. Some of them are relevant just to kind of what's happening at that time. Some of it is more kind of timeless type of stuff. So go check it out. It's a good time. You can also find me on Twitter at ReindeerGames91. Twitter handle got shouted out at Doug Loves Movies when I was at the show because I gave him a name. So if you like Doug Loves Movies, you'll hear me yell out a name.
Yeah. So again, we really do appreciate you guys tuning in, especially for those who came in on the Twitch stream. Obviously, your questions help us kind of keep the conversation going, kind of go to different tangents, which I know you all enjoy. And just to reiterate what Jake was saying about the Patreon, it's a way for us to keep bringing you value during the off season where there's maybe a little less direct news for us to talk about with the Ducks. We're going really in depth right now. We're doing an off season preview for every team in the league. And we started by doing the Pacific Division just 2 days ago. We talked about every single team in the division, what to expect of their offseason, where we think they should go. That's $5 a month. It helps support something that we're trying to build up here. And it also gives you some great content. So that's at patreon.com/ACPod. Find us on Twitter at Anaheim Calling. I'm on Twitter at Felix_Sicard. And once again, that's for Jake at ReindeerGames91, at ReindeerGames91 on Twitter. So that's going to do it for us tonight, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will catch you at the next pod. Talk to you then.
Bye.